Bandwidth for this podcast is brought to you by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com. This is the iOS Show, episode 286, recorded on February 6th, 2016. Enjoy! All right, then it's time for the iOS Show, where we cover all things iOS and beyond. I am Michael Johnston, and with me, as usual, is Adam Christensen from the MacCast. Hey, Adam, how are you doing?
I'm doing all right.
Good.
Just working on tax stuff.
Oh, you can put that off till like the day before it's due.
No. I got to send stuff to people because I'm a freelancer, and they've got to 1099 me, and they realize now that they haven't asked me for W-9s.
Oh. Do I have to do that too?
What?
I think
No. We didn't do enough business together for you to have to worry about that. And besides, it would be me getting a W-9 from you and 1099ing you.
Oh God, I don't know what all those numbers are, but I don't want to do it. So it's good
that you don't have to. We haven't done enough business.
Good. Let's not do it. And Jeff Gamet is here from the Mac Observer. Hey Jeff, how are you doing?
Hey, I'm doing great. And because I'm not doing any taxes right now.
Sweet.
I know. I feel so liberated. I feel like a rebel.
The good news is, you know, in order to do this stuff, I get to use what the heck is it called? Smile, my PDF program.
PDF Pen Pro,
which I talk about all the time, and now I can't remember the name of it.
How do you spotlight it if you don't know what it's called?
I do know what it's called.
You type PDF.
Had a brain fart.
Okay.
But I use it to encrypt, you know, so I can encrypt the PDFs and I can sign them and do all that good stuff.
That's cool. I bought a Blu-ray DVD of The Martian.
God. Why?
Because I wanted a physical copy that I could subvert if I wanted to, it was the same price as the one on iTunes.
Yeah, but you got to go somewhere or have something shipped.
No. Yeah, I had it shipped.
This piece of plastic that you have to deal with.
Mm-hmm. There's paper, an envelope, and I had to pull things out of a package.
That's so 2010.
That's so retro.
And then I scanned a barcode with my phone, and it made it into my iTunes. So it came with a digital copy,
yeah,
which is cool because I think this is the first time I've ever used a digital copy.
Oh, really? Digital copy is cool as long as they include the iTunes one and don't make you do the stupid.
Yeah, and it did.
The Sony broken thing.
What the hell is that thing called? It's blue light or something.
It's ultraviolet.
I think it's called
now.
Sony We Hate You format.
Isn't that ultraviolet?
Ultraviolet, that's it.
Yeah, that dumb thing. So,
which just brings on ultra violence for me. Uh-huh.
So it comes with the iTunes thingy. So it's basically two movies for the price of one, except it's the same movie.
Right.
but I figured I would mention it because I really wanted to mess with the extras on there, and I don't have a Blu-ray player. I have a Blu-ray drive for my computer that I can rip Blu-rays with.
But you can't play them.
You can, sort of. You can do it with VLC.
Software, right?
VLC will do it if you have a... So Dave Hamilton has an article up on TMO. Yep. About how to rip Blu-ray discs. And part of that gets the library for that on your computer, and I'm pretty sure that once you've done that, then VLC will play the DVD for you. Pretty certain. It could be completely wrong. So what was I going to say? Oh, I want to look at the extras. And I guess you can't look at menus on Blu-ray menus on your Mac, no matter what software you have.
Right. Well, I think there is some specific Blu-ray player apps for the Mac, but
I've used those.
I don't think they're cheap.
I've grabbed them, and they're beta support for the menus, and so sometimes it doesn't work. So
Blu-ray's a bag of hurt, haven't you heard?
It is.
I have heard that.
So I went through a couple of the titles in the DVD, like manually going through title one, title two, title three to look at like the extras. And that was a pain in the butt. And then I realized I went to my iTunes app and I saw that it had the iTunes Extra blue square. So I clicked on that and had my first experience with iTunes Extras.
Which are awesome.
Which are really cool. It's basically like the DVD.
My question would be, I always thought that the iTunes Extras were often different than what was on the physical discs.
In the case of The Martian, they're identical.
Cool.
It's like one for one. Because I looked through all of the different titles before, like, you know, skipping through.
Right. I don't know if that's always the case. But
it may not be. But it made me very happy until I went to the Apple TV and I'm like, okay, I'm gonna get my Blu-ray DVD experience thingy. And then I was like, where the hell's the blue box for iTunes Extras? And then I did searching and people said, just press play. And I did that and it just played the movie. So I couldn't figure out where the extras were.
You have to kind of do it the right way. Yeah. They're there.
No.
So they're there. I've watched all the Blu-ray, all the Martian extras on Apple TV because I bought the movie through iTunes.
Yeah. So the deal is, on my Apple TV, I have a 720p TV, and so I don't typically rent in HD. Mm-hmm. And the problem is, if you want to rent anything in SD, you have to go deep within the confusing settings and turn off high def, basically universally for the entire iTunes store. And doing that not only turns off HD for new rentals and purchases, but it also does that for things that you have purchased, including this, which means that I wasn't getting the extras, just don't come up for SD stuff. So I had to figure out where the hell the settings were again and change it back to high def after a half an hour of figuring out why this wasn't working. And just magically I get my iTunes extras. So you have to have HD on either 720 or 1080 in order to see the extras.
So I don't know how it is on the Apple TV if you're buying or renting directly. But just so people know, on your iOS device, if you're watching on an iPad or an iPhone and you're in iTunes, if you want to get the SD, typically if you go to the movie page and scroll all the way to the bottom, there is a also available in SD option.
Yeah, and I'm pretty certain
to tap on that to switch over. But I know they've made it a little bit easier to get to the SD content, at least in iTunes on iOS. I don't remember how it is on the Apple TV itself.
I'm checking it out now, but I'm pretty sure that doesn't exist. It's really difficult on the Apple TV.
It's also another trick because my kids have iPad minis, but they only have 16 gigs of storage. So very often they'll want to download something that we've bought in SD, and you can't just play it or download it directly from the video app if you haven't changed that setting, right? So if you go into videos and you see all the available movies. And plus, we've discovered recently, there's a whole nother problem. If you're using family sharing, there's no way in the videos app to, if like my kids on their own account, they don't see any of the purchases, and there's no way in the app itself to get to the purchase content. For music, you can see like the other accounts. So she can go into my account and then look at what I bought and download it. Movies has apparently not been updated, or videos has not been updated like
that. That's really stupid.
Yeah, so it's really frustrating. So the workaround for people, and this works for getting HD or SD, is to go into the iTunes store and then just go to the page, you know, like you were going to buy it, and then you could just download it directly from there.
Fun.
But you can't, the problem with the videos thing and family sharing is there's no way to stream directly because you don't, it doesn't show up in like cloud purchases, and there's no way to switch to another account. So Apple needs to get that fixed.
Wow. That's actually really messed up.
Yeah, well, family sharing's been kind of messed up since the beginning. It keeps getting better, but there were certain edge cases like this I think they did not think through. Like, they didn't think about this stuff. Dave Sparks tried it early on, and literally he had to quit because there were so many of these little things, and now it's good enough that it works in most cases, but this was one of those edge cases when we were on our last trip. My daughter's like, I don't see any of the movies. I don't know how to stream them. And I'm out of storage on my device. And I'm like, oh.
Nuts.
Yeah.
Wow.
There you go.
Fun. Okay. So let's move on to truly good, fun stuff.
Really? And, there's good, fun stuff this week?
Yeah. According to 9to5Mac, Apple's going to have their next media event on March 15th. And BuzzFeed confirms that. I don't know why BuzzFeed is a good source, but I guess they are. And I'm getting...
It just works for this story.
Because MacRumors thinks that they're a good good source. I'm sure they are. BuzzFeed's, like, huge. So I guess they would have sources.
But you would think.
You would think. And at the event... It seems as though we will be seeing a smaller iPhone, so our new 4-inch iPhone, the 5 SE Plus. And I'm joking.
The 5 SE Plus, new user, smaller form factor experience.
Good sure that's the full name. 5 SE 30.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I wanted to say.
Yeah. All of those things.
And this summer they're coming out with the iPhone 5 SE Performa.
Mm-hmm.
And 3 weeks later, the iPhone 5 SE Quadra, and then followed by the Centris.
Yeah. You must have a good source, too.
I have a really good source.
Yeah. So, in addition, new iPad, it seems, and new watch bands. So, it seems like March 15th is going to be the date. Of course, the new Apple campus isn't finished. So, I would imagine it's probably going to be at the town hall, probably. What are we thinking? I guess there's really no.
Yeah,
it's probably too early to know, but it doesn't seem like, unless there's a brand new product category, they typically just kind of do it at their place.
And these are all minor revisions.
Yeah.
So right.
They're going to stay home, make people come to them.
Although, Adam, I like what you dubbed the iPad Air 3. The iPad Pro Mini.
Yeah, the iPad Pro Mini. Awesome.
Yeah, so jumping to that.
Did I jump you out of?
No, it's fine. The order doesn't matter. Nobody knows about the order.
And clearly, I don't even know about the order, and I'm on the show.
So there have been some cases coming out based on drawings. Those drawings that we typically see a couple months before a product comes out, just the basic wireframes of the products
that supposedly case developers get.
Yeah. And so now we've seen some actual cases come out. And typically when we see the cases come out, it's because they have enough confidence that that is the true drawing. And
those drawings, I think, are just based off of other room supply chain.
Well, I mean,
often, right.
Yeah.
Honestly, I haven't seen many drawings that
Apple doesn't. Sorry, I was just going to say, Apple does not send early schematics to like really obscure third-party case developers in China, just so people know.
Yeah, it's probably people who work at like Foxconn who have a cousin that works at the case place and they want to help them out or something. But based on those drawings, the cases that are coming out have four speaker ports. It appears to have a spot for a flash in addition to the camera.
That would be a first for an iPad?
Yes.
I think it's likely going to happen just because so many people do use their iPads now to take photos. It's just become more and more prevalent.
Yeah. And a, the smart connector?
Smart connector for the keyboards, yep.
Yeah. So we're probably going to be seeing those keyboard cases. Now, do you think that we're going to see... Apple Pencil compatibility with this thing?
That would be nice. I've heard one of the rumors said Apple Pencil compatibility, not 3D touch, not that that's required for the Apple Pencil, obviously, but
right.
Just so people know. So it'd still be the pressure sensitive Indian pen. I think it makes sense to me.
I agree, especially now that we have a few months of iPad Pro sales behind us.
Yep.
But here's the deal. If you want a pencil, get it now. Well, I think they're in stock right now, finally.
Well, right? Some places.
Some places, but you have a better chance now than you will if they do add pencil support for the iPad Air 3. Supplies are already constrained on pencils, so just like, you might want to think about picking one up early.
Yeah. So the,
even if you have to return it, you know?
Yeah. Well, I'm inclined to
sell it on eBay. Maybe
believe that the, that we're probably going to be seeing a pencil compatible iPad Air. Just given the amount of Windows, what are they called?
The Surface.
Yeah, the Surface Pros that I see in classes. I see tons of them all the people are using pens and keyboards with them. They're doing the whole nine, and I'm getting a little bit jelly. So I need to.
Are you all jelly, Michael?
I'm a little gel. Yeah,
you should get a Pro.
Okay,
they're freaking awesome,
dude. The Pro is $1,000.
Mm-hmm.
No,
yeah,
I have a computer, and also I have a notebook that cost me $3. That works just fine. Just saying.
Well, then you're not that jealous.
I guess I may not be that jealous. Well, I can draw circles around those guys all day with my my pencil that has a little twist erase at the top. The Twister Ace.
Which pencil do you like? Do you use the Pentel one?
Yeah. Yeah, we've been over
those. Oh, those things are awesome.
Yeah, they're my favorite.
Okay, but what lead diameter are you?
Okay, because people are super interested. Seven, I get the 0.7.
I do the 0.9.
0.9?
Yeah, I actually use a mechanical drafting pencil. So
I see a lot of those. I need a fat.
Do you have the like the blue, like twisty sharpener thing too?
Oh yeah,
where you have to like rotate it around in a circle.
Yep. I bought myself a nice little Stettler drafting pencil.
I have one of those too. Yeah,
okay,
those are nice.
That's what sits on my desk, and that's what I write with at my desk all the time.
I'll pull out a bonus pick this week related to this stuff later. So okay, we'll just tease that and move on.
Yes, please.
I'm excited.
So where were we with iPad stuff? Okay, so we saw the drawings.
We're talking about pencils,
another set of drawings.
And the iPad Air 3.
Yeah, so iPad Air 3 with pencil compatibility, I think, is pretty likely. As you said, the Pro has been out for a while, so they're probably not concerned about the cannibalization situation. So in addition to the 4-inch iPhone stuff.
Wait, I had one more thing before we move on, because of the smart connector, and I haven't heard this rumored, but I would imagine it would happen. I would imagine Apple's going to do a version of their smart keyboard
with
the Air 3 as well.
If it has the connector, it would have to. It's just not going to work with the other case.
Well, I mean, they could just leave it up to
third parties
to make keyboard cases.
But they're not going to.
Air 3.
They're not going to. They get so much money on those accessories.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. All right. Now moving
on. Okay. So according to data from Mixpanel, they've done some surveying and found that 32% of active iPhone users still have 4-inch screens. And that's not surprising. It seems like a lot of people really don't want a bigger iPhone. I've grown to enjoy my iPhone 6, but I mean, there are people who have reached out to me who say, you know, I prefer the 4-inch iPhone. I would maybe even like the original sized iPhone, which seems insanely tiny, you know, after using an iPhone 6. But I think Apple has come to the conclusion that there still is demand, and it kind of makes sense as far as the timeline goes. They probably planned it out this way, as far as, you know, let's get out the bigger iPhones, let's only make those and see how the market reacts, and those people who truly truly want the smaller iPhones will be okay with holding on to those for a while, and we'll just see how that shakes out. And if it shakes out that people still like their smaller iPhones, then we'll continue doing that. And it seems like that's what they're doing.
It's what it sounds like.
Yeah.
I talk to a lot of people that really want a smaller iPhone still.
Yep.
So, yeah, at least in the subset of people I speak with, there's interest.
Yeah. Air 53 bug. I don't know if it's a bug. It's not a bug.
It's a feature.
It is a feature.
It's a feature. Yeah.
Yeah. So Your iPhone 5S and up has a Touch ID sensor in it. So it stores your fingerprints and does some fancy security things for you.
Well,
in that secure enclave.
Your fingerprints, it captures them.
It captures. Yeah. Okay. So is it like a hashed sort of thing?
Correct.
Okay.
But no, I mean, the fingerprint data is stored in the secure enclave.
Yes.
So, and it's related to this story. The two things together are related to the story. So it's important
right.
for people to understand that the sensor is going to capture your fingerprint data. That data is then carried to a special chip on your iPhone called the secure enclave where it's stored.
Correct.
And inaccessible.
To any other part of the
app
US.
Or, yeah.
Yes. Yes. And for good reason, your fingerprints, you can't change them. So recently a guy, I guess a photographer at The Guardian, experienced a situation where he had his home button replaced a couple months ago in another country. And when he went to update to a newer version of iOS 9, his phone was effectively bricked.
Yeah. He goes into some sort of boot loop and you get an error, this error
53.
Error 53.
Yes. And the reason is because the home button was done at a non-Apple certified place. And so they didn't have the correct process to do that repair properly.
And probably didn't even have the correct part.
That's
meaning
possible.
Like it was an aftermarket part.
Well, I mean, I'd say there's a 50-50 chance that they could have just gotten one.
Yeah. What I've been reading is there is a repairing process that needs to happen.
Yes.
So what's going on here is the secure enclave and the button are paired together so that they know if there's ever a disconnection of that connection or something changes, that's a red flag to the security system to say, look, this is the home button's been tampered with or messed with or something changed with the Touch ID sensor. And you have to do there's a procedure apparently that you need to go through after doing that to repair them together so that they're matched up and that the secure connection is there. Because the idea is, you know, if someone got a hold of your phone physically and then hacked, they could hack in a button that maybe captured that fingerprint data and sent it off somewhere before integrating with secure enclave. So it's a red flag to the system. And it's actually good in terms of if you talk to anybody who's in security, you know, hardware security, it's a way to keep the hardware secure and make sure that it's not being tampered with.
So that sounds like a good thing.
Yeah, ultimately, it's a security thing. I don't think it's a situation where Apple is forcing you to give them more money, as some people want to say.
Yeah, some people are implying it's Apple trying to force, you know, only
trying
having
to
repairs.
Well, I like
only
the
repairs done at an Apple authorized facility, and you really want to do that anyway because those are the guys who are going to know these procedures. I think this is just a case of you go to a third party who hasn't had the training from Apple, which is what you get when you become an authorized dealer. How are they going to even know these procedures? I mean, they're going to know them now that it's sort of the story's been broken, and I'm sure you could probably find out what is the process for, you know, doing the repairing, the repairing, not fixing, but repairing the secure enclave and the home button after doing a fix. But they obviously just didn't know what that thing was. The only weird thing about this story that was pointed out, and one of the things that I was reading, and specifically in this guy's case, so he had his home button repaired, but then it was apparently working until he ran the software update. And Apple claims that when you run the software update, there's additional checks that happen between the home button and the secure enclave, and that's what triggers the error 53. But that seems to contradict the other thing that they're saying, where the whole point of this is that if the home button is messed with in any way, it's going to throw up a red flag. The red flag didn't get thrown until you ran a software update. So could someone...
So someone could be stealing your fingerprints
until you run the software update?
Months.
Yeah, that's a little weird. So Apple needs to clarify that a little bit. You know, why doesn't it detect it immediately and start throwing the error 53? Why does it take additional checks that happen later or maybe never?
Well, I would imagine it has something to do with maybe if you were to go in and change your, add some fingerprints or delete some fingerprints, maybe it would brick out there. Maybe it depends on, accessing.
Yeah, but again, still, you think of like NSA spying or government spying or, by any government. if they were to tweak that, could they be capturing that data?
I don't think so. The thing that confuses me is there's...
Are you implying because the fingerprint's already stored, so in those cases, maybe all that's happening is it's just doing a verification of what's already stored in there?
Yeah. And then if you were to try to modify any data in the enclave, then maybe additional checks occur.
Well, what you could do is design a replacement home button that when it scans your fingerprint...
Right.
So that the secure enclave can do its part. It's capturing your fingerprint every single time.
Right. And
storing it in its own separate. Yeah.
Yeah. But maybe, again, I don't know how the Touch ID works after the initial scans. Is it actually recapturing fingerprint data, or is it scanning the fingerprint and converting that into something else before it does the check?
There's a lot going on that I'm sure that. To make it secure,
and Apple's not going to tell anybody how it works. Again, as part of the security, that information needs to stay secure. So,
right,
who knows? But the end point, I think, that you were trying to make, Michael, which is accurate, is this is not about Apple trying to force, only Apple repairs or get extra money out of people.
Right. If it was a situation where you replace your battery and it bricks itself, then. That'd be a different story.
At the same time, recognizing extenuating circumstances, like you're in a country and it's not possible to get to an Apple authorized repair center, which does come up. I just feel most of the time you want to go to an Apple authorized center because there are little things like this, and there have been forever, with your Mac, with anything else. The parts components that people are going to install, the procedures and processes for doing the installations. Apple has really specific guidelines, and, sure, anybody can go in and do a repair, but there can be things that get missed.
Yeah.
A classic one I remember with the iMac, like hard drives, is there was a temperature sensor mm-hmm. that was really critical that it be, removed carefully and reattached. And there were lots of cases where people would get a hard drive replaced and then suddenly, they'd be getting all kinds of errors and crashes because
fans would run full tilt.
Yeah. Exactly.
So. Now this, for what it's worth, this Touch ID thing has been known for a while. It's been known that this would happen. If you were to look at the repair guides on iFixit for, I think, even the 5S, if you go to the home button replacement instructions, it says, note, your Touch ID will no longer work if you do this. Now, it's interesting to me to know how the repairing process happens. And it would be nice if there was a way for common folk to do this themselves. But I guess the ultimate thing for me is, why does a Nuke and Pave not... restore your phone to a working state. So let's say is that the pairing process, right? Is it to just, there was data in the secure enclave and it was paired with this particular button, but now because the button has been replaced, the only way to ensure security is to erase the entire enclave and repair it with this new button. And the process of doing that is just simply doing a total restore. You know what I mean? It seems basically the story goes, the guy went to the Apple store after he got the error and they said, there's nothing we can do, but we can offer you a new phone.
Right.
As far as like, and by new phone, I mean, you can give us money for a new phone.
Oh, not swap out.
But right.
Here, we'll sell you a new phone.
We will sell you a new phone. And it seemed like it was a full priced kind of deal. You'd probably get some money. I guess that's one of the stories that I think came out this week is that Apple will take broken phones for and give you some money toward a new one, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So.
Yeah, that, I mean, that doesn't sound, again, based on the what Apple officials people said after this happened, that doesn't sound like an accurate thing. And that may just be, again, someone at the Genius Bar not understanding the procedure or what happened. Because it
Which does sound totally possible.
They could have just re-replaced the home button and then repaired it with the secure enclave, and it probably would have been fine. So he, at worst, it would have been, hey, you've got to pay for a new repair.
Which would have been better than having to buy a brand new phone.
Right.
Yeah, I have found upon occasion, you need to talk with multiple geniuses or genii, whatever the appropriate plural is, because right. you get one that doesn't get what the problem is, another one that doesn't understand that it's a problem that they can fix, and then you need the third one to say, why haven't you fixed this yet?
Yeah.
But then other times I walk in and they're like, yep, no problem, and fix it, no questions asked.
Yeah.
It's just done, whatever the problem is.
Yep, yep. So be careful with your home buttons. I guess that's the takeaway. iPhone 7 rumors. It appears that Apple has been, according to DigiTimes, they've been testing those dual lens cameras for their iPhones. They've been getting samples and that sort of thing. And I think we've known about that for a little while. But as far as the design of the next iPhone, it seems, based on what we're hearing, that it will essentially look the same as the current iPhone 6 and 6S's do, although there won't be a antenna line across the back, and the camera will be flush with the case.
That'll be interesting to see. Actually, at this point, it'll be kind of weird to see a flush camera on an iPhone.
Yeah. Oh, and I forgot to mention, as far as the 4-inch iPhone goes, we saw a rumor from Makatakara that we will see a bright pink. It will come in several colors, including bright pink, which kind of implies that we'll see many other colors as well, similar to the iPod Touch.
Mm-hmm. I'm not so sure about that.
Okay, I'm not so sure about that.
Just pink?
I could see doing like 2 or 3 colors. Or maybe doing like the silver, the space gray, and the rose gold, which might be interpreted as pink.
I suppose. That would be the
other
way.
They are saying, I mean, the rumors are saying bright pink for some reason.
Yeah, it seemed like they're trying to imply that it is not the rose gold color.
Okay, so then pink, blue, and green, or something like that.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to do that, though. I think it is going to be the standard complement of colors, and maybe replace the rose gold with a bright pink on that line for some reason.
Yeah, well, that's what they did with the 5C. The 5C was that way, and I think it was popular.
But it was all bright colors. I would think you'd go one way or the other, but the way these rumors have been sounding, it sounds like they're going to do the standard complement of colors to match the iPhone 6 and either add this bright pink, or I would assume the bright pink would replace the rose gold. So you'd have space gray, silver, and bright pink for some reason.
Sure.
Which is odd. I mean, it sounds odd, but
pink is popular.
I think it's them trying to capitalize on the
baby rock.
Well, I'm trying to figure out a way to say this where it doesn't sound offensive. I don't believe this, but obviously Apple's marketing people think that
ladies like cheap
women
phones.
Are more likely to buy the smaller phone and want pink for some reason.
Yeah.
Could be. Or maybe in the markets that they think this will sell best, those are markets where pink is a popular color just in general.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe they looked at, you know, the sales of the 5C, and that was the most popular color.
Yeah, that could be too.
So, who knows? That is a little bit weird. On the flush camera thing, I haven't heard anybody saying that the flush cameras would only be like in the Plus.
Yeah, right? That's
because one of the reasons that I've heard that Apple would be able to do a flush mount system is because of the idea that they think they're going to switch to this dual lens system from Lynx, right?
Yeah.
And those, what I read about the Lynx technology is their technology also enables the sensors to be about half the height of other sensors.
Right. They also have a patent on a curved lens sort of thing where you can like shift the angle of the light.
Mm-hmm.
So part of what you would need depth for in a camera, you could switch that so it becomes a right angle, and then it becomes length down inside the iPhone.
Mm. Yeah, but we had heard that maybe the dual lens system was going to be reserved for just the Plus model. And so then it also makes me wonder, though, is that technology good enough in a single lens system where they could swap out the current single lens and only use one of those Lynx lenses? Because wasn't the rumor also that one of the lenses in the dual lens system was going to be like a wider angle and one was going to be more like the standard lens?
Yes.
So it does make me wonder if is that lens technology good enough to operate as single lens? I've only ever heard it referred to as a dual lens system, though.
I don't know. But if it is, then that would take away some of the sting for us iPhone 7 buyers that don't get the benefit of dual lenses.
Or maybe they'll just surprise us and have dual lenses in both. That would be awesome.
That would be awesome.
That's what I want.
That's what I want, too.
What else are they going to add to an iPhone 7?
I don't want a freaking big phone again. I'm not going to do it.
Yeah, but seriously, what are they going to do with an iPhone 7 besides, remove the headphone jack for you? Because that's a burden. And then remove antenna lines. $800, please.
Well, and it's funny, the mock-ups on that have shown they're not even like really removing the antenna lines, just the one across the middle.
Yeah.
Right.
So the one over the top area is still going to be the one that goes...
Which I'm totally over because I use the iPhone, the Apple case, so I never even see that anymore anyway. So,
yeah, I forget that those lines are there until someone runs an article saying, hey, they're going away. Yeah, I keep my Apple case on my iPhone all the time.
Yep.
All it takes is one drop to make you wish you left the case on.
Yeah, pretty much. What else? Oh, Sony is saying that their dual cameras will be seen in devices from major smartphone players this year. So, I believe Sony has produced sensors in all of the devices.
Yeah,
many
iPhone cameras are Sony.
Yeah, yeah. So it seems likely that we're going to be seeing some dual cameras, which is good. I want some fancy cameras. And a little bit of Apple TV love. The universal search has been improved slightly and now includes Fox Now, FX Now, and Nat Geo, which is very nice. So if you don't know, Apple launched the Apple TV with the universal Siri search, which... You know, gets us one step closer to the magic of not having to search through a bunch of different providers to figure out where you can watch your thing. So they launched it with Netflix, Hulu, HBO, Showtime, and of course iTunes. And that's pretty nice. But they also said that they will be adding more to that list as time goes on. And that is what we're seeing now. So now when you search for a particular show, if it is available on one of those providers, you will also see that as an option when you search for it, which is very nice and very handy. Do you guys use the Siri search?
I do sometimes.
Yeah, not very often, to be honest.
Really?
Yeah, well, not as much as I thought I would.
I use it.
Well, the problem for me is that it doesn't work consistently for me, meaning not every place I want. And sometimes it gets confused and doesn't give me results.
Yeah, it's picky about how you need to phrase the query. You need to say, show me this. You can't really say, you can't just press the button and say 30 rock. It'll say, I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, and sometimes it still gets confused. It's the same reason why, even though I would love to still be using Siri all the time to do stuff with my HomeKit devices, I've pretty much given up. Because you have to say things exactly the right way, and even still sometimes Siri is like, well, I can't find anything like that. And
yeah, HomeKit's pretty picky about the specific commands.
Oh, it's painfully picky.
Yeah. Okay. I'm ready for picks. Are you guys ready for picks?
Sure.
Okay. Jeff, I'll let you go first.
All right. So my pick is, it's a cable. And it's Radtex ProCable UHD. And it's a USB to Lightning. So it's a sync charge cable for your iOS devices. And what I love about it is that they designed this to be insanely durable. So it's got this heavy-duty kind of fabric woven covering down the cable so that it's reinforced. And then where the connectors are, it's like these metal casings around the connectors. So you're far less likely to be able to break the cable where it goes into the connector itself, which is an ongoing problem that I've had with Apple's Lightning cables.
This is the Pro Cable, you said? Oh, yeah, Pro Cable UHD.
Yep, and it comes in, like, three different lengths. I have the six-foot cable, which is, I want to say, like $16, $18, something like that.
$16.95.
No, I wasn't off by much. And what I did was I put this in my car because I was always breaking Lightning cables in my car. And it just stays plugged in there all the time. And it gets crunched when the seats move forward and back. And it's yanked on all the time. And this thing will not die. It's like a bomb-proof cable.
Nice.
Really?
Yeah, I love this thing.
I've been using and had pretty good success with the Anker cables. But recently I had two that went bad. The good news is they warranty their cables, so I got replacements, but it still didn't seem to solve the problem. And we talked about this on the MacCast too. And Jeff, it sounds like you're like me. I've had people who say they've never had a problem with the Apple cables, but I'm constantly having them break around that connection point.
Yeah, and it's the ones that I keep in my car. And I always keep one in my car because, hey, we have to charge our phones whenever we're in our car. And I would burn through those. Like, I'd say about once every 4 months, I'd have to go buy a new cable.
Holy cow.
Yeah.
Yeah, because they would just get crunched and bent weird.
Well, they get pulled, you know, people are in the passenger seat and you pull them at, you know, an odd angle and then they break right at that connection point.
Wow. I've had one in my car since I got the iPhone 5, and it's now starting to, the plastic is starting to get a little bit, like, cracked. But that's it. But I've had it in there for years.
So. Wow. Well, I'm making up for the cables that you haven't bought.
Okay, good. Thank you.
Me too.
Yeah. Also, the Radtex cable, it's Apple certified. So you don't have to worry about whether or not it's going to work or blow up your iPhone.
Does the cable, is it smart enough to not let you blow up your phone? Or can you pump enough juice through there to...
My guess is that if you pumped enough juice through it to blow up your phone, that the cable would break.
Oh.
Like it would fry before that happened.
Interesting. Okay. Adam.
Yes, sir.
What's your pick? Is it a pencil?
No, I have a secondary pick, but let me do my first pick.
Okay.
And it's actually software for your Mac, but the reason it's iOS related is if you enjoy Minecraft Pocket Edition on your iOS devices, one of the limitations that Minecraft Pocket has had for a long time is there's no server. So you can go, like, you can set up a session if you're playing with multiple people and you can play all on the same network. But you can't kind of have like an ongoing server like you normally would with Minecraft, the desktop edition. There is a cool project called Pocket Mine that is open source, and you can download it. It's at, I think, pocketmine.net. I dropped the link in the show in for you, Michael, to put in the show notes. But it lets you run on your Mac a Minecraft server that works with the Pocket Edition. So you can set it up. You can start it running in the background on a Mac. I use it on my old Mac Mini. And it's a little PHP server, believe it or not. It's kind of funky. And then you can have a always running Minecraft server on your home network. And if you want to get really, you know, really advanced about it, you can even like open up the ports on your network and, you know, set up access to that so that, you know, anybody could access it from anywhere in the world. And you could share out your own Minecraft server for Pocket Minecraft. And it's relatively easy to install. It's just two terminal commands. You run basically a curl script to grab and download the distribution you want from the server, and then just there's a startup shell script that will run it. And it has packaged into it its own copy of PHP, so you don't have to do any PHP configuration or anything like that.
Ooh.
It's like all ready to go.
Can you run this on a Raspberry Pi?
They do have a Linux distribution. Yes, there is a Raspberry Pi version.
Nice. That's really cool.
Yeah. So if you or your kids or your family like Pocket Minecraft and you want to set up your own server, you can use Pocket Mine to do that. And it was a little bit buggy at first, but this latest distribution, I think I'm running the current development build, is really good. It's they've gotten rid of a lot of the glitches and things like that. There's still a few in there, but again, it's an open source project, so you can contribute. And like I said, I'm using the development build, and I haven't had too many issues. They have a distribution build, a beta, and then development, which is kind of the most experimental, but also has the most features. And then there's also like plugin support. So if you want to do some mods and things like that, they have those available as well. So you can kind of tweak parameters of the game, all that fun stuff.
Cool.
Yeah, Pocket Mine. Okay, so then the bonus pick that's related to pencils is a while ago we found this ruler called Incra, I-N-C-R-A, Incra.com. And they are precision marking rulers. So it's a metal ruler, but the key to it is that it has little holes and little slots like drilled into the markings on the ruler. So instead of having to go along the edge and just try and mark on the edge,
uh-huh,
at every 16th and every 32nd of an inch, it actually has a place that you can take a, and you need a sharp pencil for this, like a 0.5 millimeter or smaller lead. You can just put that right in the slot and mark it. So you get no off angle. You don't have to worry about your eyesight. It's like you are perfect to a 32nd of an inch in your markings.
Ooh.
Yeah. It's pretty sweet.
Okay, that's cool.
Yeah. So that's my bonus pick. You can find them on Amazon or just go to Incra.com, I-N-C-R-A.com.
Cool. Okay, so my pick is expensive, but I think that's fine because I don't usually do expensive picks. It is the DJI Phantom 3, any of those. I've been playing with the Phantom 3 standard. It was my first drone, and, well, I should say quadcopter, right? And man, I feel like I probably have spoiled myself being that it's my first one, because this thing makes it really easy to fly. Like, yeah. Super, super crazy simple. And the reason I'm talking about it on this show is because you have to have an iOS device. Although I believe it works with Android too, correct?
I don't know. Can you not hook up the Phantom controller to it also?
I can't get it to do anything without my phone paired to it.
Yeah, I don't know. I have a DJI Phantom 2 that didn't come with the iOS control stuff. It just came with a handheld remote.
Yeah, so system. The three does come with a remote, and then so you it has a little clip on the remote where you you clip on your phone in landscape mode. I have the standard, the advanced, and the pro. Both have larger clips to support iPads, mm-hmm. which is really nice. I think I'm probably gonna return this and go to the advanced, honestly, because when you use it with your iPad, I kind of set the iPad on the roof of my car and then use the controller. So you use the controller to control the drone still, and then the iPad or the phone is what you use to see through the camera. So you get your live HD view, you get your GPS position of where it is, and you can have it do all the fun stuff through that interface. And then the controller really is the bridge between your iOS device and the drone, and it also allows you to control its movements.
So you're saying you can't fly by line of sight without the iPad or iPhone?
I have not been able to get it to do anything without it being connected to a phone or an iPad. Yeah.
They do have an app that you can run on your Mac where you can change a lot of the configuration and the settings in the firmware of the device itself. It may be possible.
Oh, they
might do some research. You may be able to like hack the firmware. It might be just a flip it setting or something like that.
Yeah, there are a lot of things. And of course there's the DJI Phantom 2, which is the previous version, and that's the one that you have, Adam.
But there's different models. So like I have the one that's just the quadcopter. So it doesn't come with a camera system or anything like that. I had to add all that stuff on myself, and I still don't have an FPV, a first-person view system. So really, if you're looking to get in and you want to do, you know, like where you can see
what it sees,
first-person view, what the camera sees, you're better off just going with the out-of-the-box system, I think. Because ultimately, it's going to end up being cheaper. Because by the time you price out all the individual parts you need, like the gimbal and then the you know, sender receivers, and you've got to hack it and you've got to build it yourself, it's just... At the pricing they have this stuff at now.
I'm looking at the Phantom 2, the one that you have.
Phantom 3, you know, even like the standard.
Well, the one you have is $500 MSRP. And the one I have is the same exact price, and it has a camera and the gimbal and everything. It has so many awesome features. Like I said, I guess the most important thing is it has a GPS antenna in the top of it. So in addition to a compass and barometer, So the GPS antenna lets it know. So whenever you take off, if you're doing it in the out of box mode, and I've just been thoroughly impressed with this thing. They could have put this thing in a million different configurations out of the box. And they've realized clearly that people who are starting this thing up for the first time really need it to be as user-friendly as possible. So by default, when this thing takes off, it logs its location on the map GPS-wise. And so when you go and you start flying around, no matter what happens, if either you go out of range of your antenna or if it figures that it has only enough battery to get back to that position, it will automatically turn around and land back at that spot. And so there have been a couple occasions where I was flying around the mountains around here, and it just decided to stop giving any signal. And so, you know, the thing is up on Bishop's Peak, and I'm thinking, well, it's supposed to come back to me. And I'm just sitting there.
So you just sit and wait.
I just sit and wait. And at some point I hear, you know, the sound of a swarm of bees.
and here comes your drone.
Here comes my drone. Yeah. So it's dead simple. It's so nice. The technology has really progressed to a point where anybody can get into this thing. I have read a lot of reviews. I read a lot of reviews and talked to some people before I decided to grab this thing. I was looking originally at the Parrots, right? The AR drones, all the Parrot drones. Everybody says that those things are just not worth it at all.
They're a toy. They are a toy.
And they're the same price as this thing.
Yeah.
Right. So it's $500. And so it's dead simple to use. You're not going to lose it. It's
well, you can, if you do the wrong thing. You can,
if you crash it into something, it's obviously not going to come back. But if you're smart with it, the other thing is, you know, it has little nuances in the auto return feature where it, if you're too low, if you're below a certain threshold, it will elevate itself before it comes back, which is nice. So it avoids hitting things.
So it doesn't like fly into trees.
Yeah. So it has tons. I mean, like so many more features than I've ever been able to play with to this point. And that's just the flying around stuff. So like I said, there's a live view that you can get from the camera, which is HD. And so it's much more impressive on the iPad. So if you want the iPad mount deal, you have to get the advanced, or you can just, you know, have someone hold it or put it on your car, but you have to get the advanced. It has a half a mile range, 20 minutes of battery. So you might want to get another battery for it. But as far as the camera goes, I was just blown away by the quality of this video. It's like it's just majestic every time I take video of anything. Like truly majestic Hollywood quality, so cool stuff. It's just a joy to take it to a park and take some video and then send it to some of my friends who are still in Illinois and are enjoying the snow, and I can show them how dumb they are for still being there.
I bet they really like that when you do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And pick up, you know, the only other thing about this, do your research.
Mm-hmm.
Check out the FAA sites.
Yeah, you have to register.
And the information. Know the rules. Actually,
I think today is the day, or yesterday, the 5th, was the deadline to register.
Know the rules. And also, FAA has an app for iOS called Before You Fly. Before You Fly.
Like the letter B, number 4, and the letter U.
Because they're hip.
What?
Because they're hip.
Because they're hip. But it'll basically, you can fire it up before you take off, and it will notify you if you're in any kind of special zones or there's any special restrictions, or it will help you kind of plan out your flying so you don't get in trouble like the guy in New York this week who flew his into the Empire State Building.
Are you kidding me?
Nope.
Wow. Yeah, and that was one
40th
of the
floor. He hit the 40th floor. It landed on the 35th, and then he went in to ask security to go get his drone, and he got detained.
Whoops.
So another cool thing about this, so like I mentioned that it has the live view, it also has a map you can switch to. And if you're, if there are any airports near you, it actually has little restriction red zones that you will see in this app. So the app even tells you about restricted zones and stuff like that too. So yeah. It's really nice.
Just for our audience, the basic rules are you can't be within 5 miles of an airport.
Yeah, don't do that. That's bad.
And you're not allowed to fly over 400 feet.
Mm-hmm.
And you're supposed to stay line of sight. You're not allowed to fly over crowds. And you can't fly.
Don't hit any people with it.
You're not allowed to fly over people. So if you're flying over people, you're already in violation. What was the last thing I was going to say? 400 feet. And don't do stupid stuff, I guess. It's the main thing.
Mm-hmm.
Be smart. Don't put people in harm's way.
Yeah.
With your drone.
So there are other cool things with this that I still haven't even messed with. Like you can do waypoints. You can set up a bunch of points that it can fly to.
Oh, yeah. With the software, you can totally pre-program it to do an autonomous flight.
You can do a point of interest. It'll fly around. Like, you know, do the circular up in the air sort of thing. You can have it follow you. So if you're like biking, you can have it follow you. So many cool things. This is just the all-in-one sort of drone. Yeah. But they don't do
obstacle avoidance yet, though. So
not this one. There are some. I saw one. What was it? The Molly or something. It was a drone that was at CES, and you kind of just toss it up into the air and hope that it's on before you like toss it over Half Dome or whatever. And that does have obstacle avoidance, but this thing is for flying. That is for taking pictures. But, this thing is just, if you were looking for a drone to get into it, for the first time. This, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, this thing is perfect. So check it out. $500 for the standard. The advanced, I think I'm probably going to switch this one out for the advanced just because if you jump up to the advanced, you get, 3 miles distance you can go with it. And it has the iPad holster and a slightly nicer, remote. But the camera and, battery life are pretty much the same deal. So check them out. They're cool. And with that, you can find all of our picks in the show notes at theiosshow.com. Review the show in iTunes. Rate the show. Tell a friend. We love all of that stuff. Feedback at theiosshow.com is the address to which you can send your questions, comments, feedback, all that stuff. Oh, what is this? So this is... Do we know this guy?
Somebody we know crashing their drone, their DJI 2 into power lines.
Yeah, why? On purpose?
No.
It looked pretty purposeful.
Oh.
They went directly for the power lines. Like beeline, right? Like
they were learning how to use their FPV and didn't.
And they learned an important life lesson that day.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So I'll just say this. Don't try flying it inside your house. Because that's the first thing I did. I was like, okay, it was like dark out and I'm like, okay, I can't take it outside. So I'll just, you know, it'll be fine. I'll just fly it inside. No, it'll hit the wall. It'll beeline for the wall or the nearest corner and just break all the blades.
The first time I flew mine, was right outside in my back patio and I promptly flew it right into a sliding glass door and broke the prop.
Oh, ouch.
It crash landed it dropped about 6 feet and then the battery popped out.
Oh, nice.
The things are surprisingly rugged.
Yeah,
so
they are.
That video I just showed you, you know, obviously hit the power line and it went straight down to the ground and survived.
Yeah. There are some really fun videos of these drones. There is one, I guess large birds don't like them and they will grab them and take them where they want. So be careful.
The British government is like training eagles to take them down.
Wow.
Or something.
You know, it wouldn't surprise me if large birds are interpreting these as other birds.
I think that's what's going on, yeah. So, yeah. What were we talking about?
We were wrapping up.
Oh, and yeah.
I distracted you with videos. Here's another one.
Okay, here, let me click that. Let me click that one. Is this
out the show.
The Empire State Building one?
So you can find me at...
Did
we already do me? I can't remember.
No, we haven't done you. Of course, advertising handled by Backbeat Media, backbeatmedia.com. Adam Christensen, he's at the MattCast, mattcast.com. At MattCast on Twitter. You have any videos of your drone?
I do, YouTube? Yeah. People check out my YouTube at The MattCast. So it's like youtube.com/TheMattCast, I think. I do have quadcopter videos there.
Oh, there's a guy who calls himself MattCast on YouTube.
Yeah. That's not me.
I know. It looks like a kid. First GoPro flight. Okay. So, videos there.
They're not very exciting.
Yeah.
Check it out.
I should put up some more of my... I have some cool video of, like, bishops and stuff and neat areas around here. Maybe I'll put those up as well.
Oh, yeah, I have a couple with the Parrot AR, and you can see how well that goes. First outdoor flight of my Parrot AR drone. The problem is the thing... Oh, no, I don't. Yeah, that's the Parrot AR. The thing is the Parrot AR is so light, the wind's just, like, any wind, and it's just gone.
No. Oh, yeah. This thing did really well on some wind the other day. I was at Pismo and and it was very windy.
I've had mine up in 11 mile an hour winds and it stays pretty stable.
The only thing, does yours have GPS?
Yeah, but we should probably close out the show because I'm sure people don't want to hear all about our drone stuff.
I think they do. I do.
I'm sure people are taking notes.
Jeff Gamet, he's at the Mac Observer, macobserver.com, TMO Daily Observations podcast. Check that out. It's every weekday, right?
Every weekday.
You get to hear from Jeff. And
I don't
and
a have
friend.
A drone, so you won't hear me talking about that.
Yeah. But so maybe that's a minus, though, because people want to hear about drones.
Well, that
right?
could be.
Probably not. At Jay Gamet on Twitter. Thanks for yes. being here.
And it's always awesome.
And I'm at Michael Johnston on Twitter. And you can find me on YouTube as well. Mostly videos that I copied from other space engineering related things. But occasionally I'll post some fun things of my own. So nobody's now going to be looking at my YouTube, which is fine. And yeah, with that, we will see you next time on the iOS show.
An internet.
How are we going to communicate this?
The stylus.
We don't want to carry around a mouse, right? So what are we going to do? Oh, a stylus, right? We're going to use a stylus.